Mics are live.
Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:03 on Wednesday, June 26, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis. Also present with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any opening comments either.
Commissioner Christman?
Well, I do. Today is going to be, unless something dramatic comes up in the next 2 days, this will likely be the last grain licensing activity that we will have in one of our meetings here, except for processing of the insolvency, which is a separate thing, and we will continue to have responsibility for it. Starting next week, the Department of Agriculture will have that responsibility, and I want to commend our staff, Conrad and Steve and Shelley and Mike and Anthony and Cheryl and Matt and Jack, and I don't know who else I'm missing, but our staff has really worked diligently to make this transition go as smoothly as possible, and I do wish the Ag Department the best in handling that. But I also want to address for a moment the insolvency. There's been a lot in the news in recent days about potential plea deal coming up, and that's outside of our realm. Our jurisdiction in this insolvency, though, continues to be what all previous insolvencies have been. We're dealing with the grain assets that we were able to marshal and certain accounts receivable. The grain assets are almost completely liquidated, and we will take the proceeds from those, as well as potentially, if there are valid credit sale contracts, of course, those will be paid out of that indemnity fund, but if there are any, it's not a lot. But we will use that trust fund and the indemnity fund to proportionately pay back these claimants. In the discussion of this plea deal, there's been talk about that an agreement to make restitution. That is outside of our realm. It's unknown to us how much the prosecutors are going to be able to capture. I hope it's a lot. But I think the way it's been reported, a lot of people have been led to believe that they're getting their money back. I don't know that that's the case. I find, just me personally, I find it hard to imagine that he has that kind of money that can be captured but has been sitting in jail all spring. So we'll see how that goes, but I just want to emphasize that I have some doubt about how much is going to end up being paid back to those producers. But the things that are under the jurisdiction of this commission, our team is working diligently on. They're making good progress, and it hopefully won't be too much longer, and we'll have a report into the courts to make a recommendation for paying back those trust fund assets.
Yes. Randy, I'm glad you mentioned the historic nature of today's meeting and kind of the closing of a chapter at the PSC with the completion of the grain licensing program. I believe it's been at the commission for 127 years. So it's been really an integral part of this agency since the agency was created. And so it is with a little sadness that we see that program go and move on over to the Ag Department. I think the commission has done a great job with that program for more than a century. And I personally, for the last 6 years, have been proud to be associated with it and to be working on that program on behalf of both the licensees that we work in and the producers. It's an important program, and I think that the commission has worked hard to do it in a manner that serves the public well. So I also want to wish the Ag Department the best in managing that and serving the producers. And we have been committed since the minute the final decision was made. All three of us have been united with our staff behind the goal of helping the Ag Department do it as effectively as possible in the shortest time possible, because they have a lot to get together and get organized and get programs set up in a short amount of time to deliver some really important pieces to the licensees that they're going to be regulating. So I think our staff has just been above and beyond helpful to the Ag Department, and there's been a good team of people from both agencies working together, and it's a good example of government agencies breaking down the barriers and coming together for the good of the citizens that we serve. So thank you to the staff who have served not only currently, but all these many years in that program. And we look forward to the Ag Department running it effectively and well for the producers of this state in the future.
Well, since we're on that, since we're on the topic, some of the conversation has been centered around the current insolvency, and was that the triggering mechanism for moving the program? And the answer is no, because I was personally approached and notified by a representative from the Ag Department a year and a half ago that they were looking at overseeing the program. We were one of four, well, currently up until the end of this month, we're one of four states in the country where the grain licensing program is was at the PSC, the Public Service Commission. Everywhere else in the country, it is at the Ag Commission offices, departments, I should say, across the country. So, and, you know, I would also commend the staff and looking at a recent, fairly recent study by NDSU, we have run an effective program for the current insolvency. It's of little consolation for the people caught up in that, but one of the lowest insolvency rates in the country, and also one of the lowest amount per claim in the country as well for both producers and businesses that may have been caught up in an insolvency. So the program was not only administered extremely well, but that's been proven by a study that came out of NDSU. So hats off to the staff for that. And I was also happy to see that the legislature moved the needle in terms of providing what I would deem more adequate resources to heighten the effectiveness of the program even further by adding two more inspectors out or into the program that weren't available to us. So, okay, with that, we have six items on consent and the previous minutes. I move they be approved. And one more caveat to the previous minutes, which would be June 12th. We're also would also be approving the June 25th special meeting minutes as well.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, I have one item, BK1. I move the commission adopt the order and Public Service Commission, Caliber North Dakota LLC Pipeline Safety Enforcement, case number GS-18-396.
Second.
On October 15th through the 18th in 2018, it was over a four-day period, a Public Service Commission gas pipeline safety inspector conducted an audit of Caliber North Dakota LLC's standard records. And on December 17th, 2018, the manager of the Public Service Commission gas pipeline safety program issued a notice of, notice of probable violation. On January 17th, and that should be 2019 in the order, Caliber submitted a letter in response to the notice of probable violation on May 15th, 2019. Based on Caliber's 2017-2019 response, the acting manager of the Public Service Commission Gas Pipeline Safety Program issued an amended notice of probable violation. On May 31st, Caliber submitted a letter in response. And also on May 31st, Caliber submitted a payment of $1,000 for the proposed civil penalty in the amended notice of probable violation. So what happened in terms of what drove the penalty, Caliber did not have maintenance, inspection, and testing records related to a pressure safety valve available at its field location in Watford City. That's a requirement by Title 49 Code of Federal Regulations. And while they were able to produce those documents at a later date, they didn't have them on hand during the inspection period. So the valve was inspected as it should be within a 12-month period, or it's an annual inspection. They actually have up to 15 months. There's a little bit of leeway, but every valve that's jurisdictional to our program has to be looked at and inspected within a 15-month period, essentially on an annual basis. So this was on a transmission line. It was from the Hay Butte gas plant. That's 2 miles south of Alexander, and then it interconnected with the northern state or northern border pipeline. So these are really important. It's really an important function of the gas pipeline safety program that we're out. We've got inspectors out looking at the companies, making sure they're doing what they need to do to maintain lines in a safe and in a safe manner, because that inspection can ward off or can head off any potential problems that would be damaging and then result in injury or harm to people and the environment. So it's an important program, and our folks continue to do a really good job in that respect. And one thing that dovetails with this, we just received our PHMSA recently conducted an audit of the program, and you either have inadequate or adequate, but we did receive an adequate rating for that. So nice work once again by staff on the program.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And one other thing, Pat, will we get a corrected version so we can sign the right one? Okay, thanks. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's amazing how the typos jump out on us when we're reading the orders, like, out loud.
I know. I highlighted. I went through it. And then all of a sudden when I was reading it.
Out loud at the meeting. There it is.
There it is.
I missed that one, too.
I did, too. All right, I have just one motion, and I did notice things on it in advance of the meeting, so they were corrected in advance. I move the commission adopt the order issuing first reissued second amended certificate of site compatibility number 23 to Otter Tail Power Company and EDF Renewable Development Incorporated Otter Tail Power transfer site certificate citing application case number PU-19-144.
Second.
On June 8th of 2011, the Commission adopted findings of facts, conclusions of law and order, and issued the Certificate of Site Compatibility number 23 to Anexco Development Corporation, designating a site for its Merritt Court Wind Project in Dickey and McIntosh Counties of North Dakota. Their certificate was amended in 2015 and in 2017. On November 3rd of 2017, the Commission also issued an advanced determination of prudence and a certificate of public convenience and necessity, authorizing Otter Tail Power Company to acquire, construct, and operate the Merritt Court Wind Project. On May 3rd of this year, EDF Renewable Incorporated, formerly Anexco and Otter Tail, filed an application to transfer the second amended certificate from EDF to Otter Tail. On May 20th, we issued a notice of opportunity for a hearing on this matter, and written comments were to be received by June 21st of this month. And on On June 11th, we did receive some comments from the North Dakota Department of Environmental Quality. I will just say as an aside that they were really kind of unrelated to the transfer of the certificate. I think they might have actually been in error, but they didn't have any comments to make in relation to the issues of this notice. So the notice of opportunity for hearing identified the issues to be considered in this matter as whether Otter Tail agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the certificate and whether the requested transfer is compatible with the public interest. The commission has found that Otter Tail is a Minnesota corporation duly authorized to do business in North Dakota and is doing business as a public utility. The affidavit of Bradley Tollerson affirms that Otter Tail agrees to assume the rights and obligations of this certificate, including the conditions and limitations set forth in all the applicable commission orders pertaining thereto. So with that completed, I think this transfer is in order and ready to be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's it for me, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 4040 to surface coal mining permit BNCR-9702 held by BNI Coal Limited to add 636.58 acres to the permit for the center mine and to update the appropriate sections of the permit for mining in the added area.
Second.
This is hard one to explain, and so just a couple things I'll point out at the beginning. You got to remember your township maps, where it's not like the printed page. It always starts each row from the left. They zigzag back and forth. If you recall your township maps, 20 is to the west of 21. That's an important thing. Otherwise, this won't make much sense. On July 6th of 2017, so just about 2 years ago, BNI Coal filed an application for revision number 40 to add the 636.5 acres of land located in section 20 of Township 142, Range 84. Following this revision, the permit will total 7,655 acres. Mining the privately owned coal in section 21 to the east of this, of the current permit area, is planned to resume in 2020 after a five-year temporary pit cessation. So 5 years ago, they were working westerly in 21. They got almost to the west border, ceased operations because it would be more efficient to mine that land once they had 20 also, and so they could work progressively. Then when this is approved, the mining progression in Section 20 is planned to begin in 2021 and proceed through 2024. Three-quarters of the coal reserves in Section 20 added with this revision are federally owned. That's been the holdup. BNI, they actually started the lease process with the federal government in 2011, and it's still not done. BNI has a lease application pending with the Bureau of Land Management for the federal coal in Section 20. They possess the surface lease to disturb the federal coal tracks to the extent necessary for conducting mining operations on adjoining tracks where the coal is privately owned. So the Fed's foot dragging is not preventing that land from being disturbed. But the overburden and coal removal on the federal coal tracks is prohibited until the coal lease is issued and the Department of Interior has approved the federal mine plan. So special condition number one is attached to this revision approval, prohibiting any overburden or coal removal from the federal coal tracks until BNI receives the coal lease and the Secretary of Interior approves the federal mine plan. Until the federal mine plan is approved, the condition limits surface disturbances on the federal coal tracks to those activities that are needed for carrying out mining on the adjoining tracks where the coal interests are privately owned, where they left off 5 years ago. of secondary post-mine topography design for sections 20 and 21 is presented in the revision application to reclaim final pit along the west section line of section 21 in the event that a federal coal lease for section 20 is never acquired. Hard to believe this foot dragging when they're 20-some trillion dollars in debt and leaving this money sitting on the table. But this revision was deemed significant and was subject to the public notice requirements. BNI submitted affidavits of publication of the required newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the permit area landowners, the advisory committee members of the revision application. We received no objections or requests for informal conferences on this application. The updated worst-case reclamation cost estimate of $35,067,865 for the Center Mine Consolidated Bond Area was submitted. The Reclamation Division has completed its revision review and recommends that this be conditionally approved.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the Commission authorize additional change orders to increase the amount of contract AM-811-19 with Agapito Associates Incorporated up to $170,000 for additional drilling, casing, and other services for the 2019 Exploratory Drilling AML project at abandoned underground coal mines.
Second.
In early March, the AML division issued an invitation for bid for drilling into underground mine workings located beneath the light industrial complex near Williston on the east side of town there. The AML division estimated that the project would require 40,000 feet of drilling and 3,500 feet of casing to locate subsurface voids, and the contract was awarded to Agapito Associates for $366,890. More voids have been encountered than originally anticipated. A change order was already issued on May 24th to increase casing by 6,000 feet and to add 100 feet of coring at $160 per foot of core. Now an additional change order is needed, and the AML division recommends the Commission allow staff to write change orders up to $170,000. We have more than enough federal funds for this additional work. Agapito is willing to do the additional work under the terms of the original contract. The project includes work at three different businesses on the site. Also, the owner of Shift Services, one of those businesses, has requested replacement of blast rock that they had on a small portion of their property that was affected by the drilling project, you know, the mud splashing and such. And that's kind of a way we've typically handled these. So Agapito has requested a change order to accommodate the increased cost of the blast rock in the amount of $1,824. These changes would increase the contract price over 40%, which exceeds the amount allowed by the Commission's change order policy and what was used to do the first change order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Number three, I move the Commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business and Central Distributing Company Incorporated, Roving Grain Buyer, Knoxville, Tennessee, discontinue business case number GE-19-202.
Second.
On June 17th, we received a request to discontinue business from Central Distributing. They will no longer be operating as a roving grain buyer under their North Dakota license. There are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And last, number four, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Valley United Co-op, Roving Grain Buyer, Reynolds, North Dakota. Discontinue business case number GE-19-203.
Second.
Also on June 17th, we received a request to discontinue business from Valley United for their roving grain buyer license. Valley United will no longer be operating as a roving grain buyer. There are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts. Valley United Co-op still maintains public warehouse licenses at Reynolds and Buxton, North Dakota. Staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, I don't want to let this last opportunity for the traditional corresponding small town trivia that I've tried to do with many of these grain licensing issues over the last 6.5 years. And so we have two communities here. And Reynolds was the hometown of a librarian. And I didn't write down his name, and his name escapes me now. But a good Scandinavian name from up there who started, as learned his librarian skills in the military in World War One, and took them on and worked in multiple universities around the world until finally he was assigned a job in Puerto Rico. And the day after he arrived, he was killed by a hit-and-run driver. The American Libraries Association named him one of the 100 most important leaders of the 20th century.
Jeez.
And so I don't know what you exactly do to, as a university librarian, to get that kind of award, but I'm thinking he really had that Dewey Decimal System down. Or something, And then Buxton is also in here, and I know some of my colleagues believe Buxton is named after speedy center fielder for the Minnesota Twins, Byron Buxton, but that's a myth. But Buxton does have something, and I really love this story. Buxton is the hometown of back-to-back governors with completely different philosophies. Mm. Back in that post-World War I era, when essentially I think all of North Dakota's elected officials were Republicans, but the ideological battle was in the primary between the Independent Voters Association, who wanted to encourage private business investment in the state, and the NPL, which were then Republicans, who wanted state investment and, you know, were unhappy with big business. And the only governor ever recalled in 1920, Lynn Frazier, was a Leaguer. And in that recall, actually, the whole Industrial Commission was recalled. So he was followed by an IVA governor, Governor Nestis, who then served two terms and was then and he was from Buxton. He was then followed by Governor Sorley, who was a Leaguer again and encouraged it. And Governor Sorley, of course, the bridge in Grand Forks is named after him. But Governor Nestis, I just wish I knew more about this guy. One thing he did that I think we all talk about and are proud to do as elected officials, he was an IVA guy. He didn't believe in this stuff, but the Bank of North Dakota and the State Mill and Elevator were new. And so even though that was not how he'd have liked to have seen it put forward, he worked during his two terms as governor very hard to make them successes, almost from the ground up. And so I really love that about him. But listen to this. He came here as an immigrant at 16 years old. His parents sent him from Norway over to live with his uncle and aunt at Buxton. At 16 years old, he spoke no English and entered first grade.
Wow.
4 years later, he had graduated. He had gotten his teaching certificate from Mayville State. He went over and to Pierce County over by Rugby and homesteaded and taught school. And within 7 more years of homesteading and teaching school, he had his law degree from UND.
6 years after that, he was over in Minot practicing law and was elected to the House of Representatives. And 11 years later, he was elected governor.
Wow.
What a success story. And I wish I knew more about what happened to him, you know, post-governorship, because he lived for another, I can't remember, 15 years or so. But I just think the Governor Nestis is a huge story waiting to be explored more and told. But I'm glad I know what little I do about him.
Is there any further discussion?
And now we know that, too. Thank you.
Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I'm not entirely sure I know what motion we just voted on. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Somebody's discontinued.
Follow the shells.
That concludes my portion.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. Thank you. All right. In terms of announcements, we have a work session today at 1:30. That will be the UGPTI draft, the annual commodity traffic report. So that's at 1:30 here in the commission room on Thursday, June 27th. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., we have SPP, RTO biannual update, and then at 1 o'clock we have the MISO biannual update. Both of those meetings will be here in the commission room as well at the state capitol. Wednesday, July 10th is our next regularly scheduled commission meeting. Then the day after, on Thursday, July 11th at 9 a.m., MDU will be coming in for an information exchange meeting on their integrated resource planning report. And then we also, in mid-July, will be on July 15th, a formal hearing for NSP on case number 18-430. That's at 9 a.m. In the hearing room at the state capitol. It's an advanced determination of prudence for a wind application. And then the following day, on July 16th, we have a formal hearing starting at 8 a.m. Again, that's an NSP case, advanced prudence for Mankato Energy Center, and that's PU-18-403. So we will now take a brief recess, followed by questions from the press. And we'll take the questions first, then we'll decide when we're going to reconvene. So this